The Athletic.
In today's Totally Football Show European edition, Champions League key midweek matches, Napoli at Ajax, Milan at the Bridge, we'll hear who the Romans call London Tower, discuss how Le Breeze became a big cheese, and say going Gonzalo to El Pepito Higuain. All that and much, much more in this Totally Football Show. Hey listener, nice to see you again. It's Tuesday the 4th of October and it's a classic lineup on today's Totally European edition with James Horncastle, Alvaro Romeo, Raphael Honigstein and happy birthday Julien Laurent. Julien Laurent.
Thank you guys.
Wow, Julien's just shocked us all by revealing his real age. You won't believe what age Julien Laurent actually is.
No one would believe.
Yeah. No.
57. Incredible.
I'm counting. For a man who gets a football shirt every week.
Yes.
I mean, what football shirt can be special for him in his birthday?
Good question.
I mean, which one are you missing?
That's a good question. Mm. I don't know, because I need shirts that are, you know, have been actually worn by players during the matches. So,
okay.
You know, that's the idea.
Are you doing anything special for your birthday, Jules?
Let me think. If I could, you know, spend an evening with friends, for example, you know, quite in a
intimate space.
Intimacy, exactly.
Yeah. Watching, you know, some of the finest footballers around, perhaps.
On live television. Yeah, that's a good idea. The Gold Show is always great when it's your birthday and it's the Gold Show, you know.
All right. Never had a Gold Show on my birthday. My birthday being May the 29th, listener. Make a note of that. Traditionally a night for Champions League finals. So, anyway, today is not May the 29th. It's 4th of October. Happy birthday, Jules. On the show today, we're going to have maybe a bit of Nations League chat. Maybe we'll talk about James Horncastle's trip to Paris. Ooh, maybe a shout-out for Gonzalo Higuain, who's just decided to hang up his shooting boots. Damn. You may have thought he was retired already. Also, there's the massive Champions League week. Ajax Napoli, Inter Barcelona, Benfica PSG, and of course, Chelsea Milan and many more. We'll get on to as many of those topics as possible. Let's begin with a round of moments of the week. Rafa.
Moment of the week in Germany came very early, James. It came on Friday night and it came after 3 minutes because Leroy Sané scored from what was more or less Bayern's first attack. Amazing, amazing assist from Jamal Musiala, who had an outstanding game against Leverkusen.
Musiala erfüllt den Strafraum. Flach nach innen. Möglichkeit für die Bayern.
The goal was so big because it opened the floodgates, it made it easy for Bayern, and you remember how fraught the atmosphere was going into that game, four games without a win, loss against Augsburg. So it was a huge goal in the context of Bayern's season. And then, as they often do when they start going and they're ahead, they blow teams away. Leverkusen also a very pliable opponent. So perhaps quite a good team to play when you're in crisis yourself. But it was really, really, I mean, you cannot overstate how important that win was for Nagelsmann and for the atmosphere in Munich and therefore affecting the rest of the Bundesliga. So, yeah, Sané, nice. Moment man of the week.
Excellent. Bayern laying down a bit of a marker there by beating a team in the bottom two of the Bundesliga. Jules, what have you got as a moment of the weekend?
I would pick the goal scored by Théo Lebris for Lorient on Sunday afternoon against Lille to give the win to Lorient, who are third in the table with a big surprise.
Vers Lebris, le bon contrôle de Lebris, qui arrive dans la surface de réparation, frappe de Lebris, et le deuxième but lorientais, et c'est le neveu de l'entraîneur Régis Lebris.
And what makes it even better is that it was his birthday. He turned 20 on the Saturday, so the day before the game. And also, if Lebris kind of rings a bell for you, it's because Régis Lebris is the Lorient manager and he's Théo's uncle. So you turn 20, you celebrate with your family, including your uncle, who is also your coach. And then the next day, you score your first ever Ligue 1 goal to give your team the win with your uncle on the bench and the whole family in the stadium. So pretty special weekend for the Le Bris family, who again are doing very, very well with Lorient.
Lovely stuff. And great use of the term U-turn as well. Alvaro, your moment of the weekend.
Well, my moment of the weekend is the man of the weekend, actually. It's Koke. After playing against Sevilla, he became the Atletico de Madrid player who has played more games with the club in all competitions, for a total of 554. A guy that is resilient, who rarely gets big injuries. He has played something like over 30 games a season since 2012, league games. And the truth is that he's tactically diligent, an academy midfielder, a passionate player, and a very important one for Atletico de Madrid. Strangely, he has played around 554 games for Atletico de Madrid, but only, I believe, that with three managers, Quique Sánchez Flores, Goyo Manzano, and then Diego Pablo Simeone, because he's been holding hands with Simeone since November 2011. So congratulations to him.
Wow, sensational. He's been at Atletico since he was six, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. He's been always there.
Crikey. All right. And Horncastle. So many moments you could choose from.
So many stoppage time moments that I could choose from. You know, Milan's win against Empoli. But I'm going to go with Udinese because they keep winning. It's now six straight wins. They won on Monday night against Hellas Verona, who are coached by the former Crawley Town manager, Gabriele Cioffi. Cioffi was in charge of Udinese and thought he could get a bigger and better job at Verona in the summer. So he left and Udinese decided to appoint Andrea Sottil, kind of former dour, monotone centre-back who really started his coaching career at the bottom of the football pyramid. And it looks like an inspired decision because they've beaten some really good teams. We've seen them beat Roma 4-0. We've seen them beat Inter before the international break. And, you know, Beto is a real kind of return to form for Udinese's scouting system. He scored 5 goals in the first 8 games of the season. Came off the bench on Monday night to get them back level because Josh Doig, the Scottish wing-back, had given Hellas Verona the lead. And yeah, it's great to have Udinese back because Atalanta had kind of stolen their thunder as the Cinderella story, if you like, in Serie A. And at the moment, Atalanta and Udinese are on the podium in Serie A. So it just goes to show that you can really punch above your weight and how competitive Serie A is right now.
Absolutely. Top 5 separated by 3 points. Napoli and Atalanta level on points with Udinese 1 point behind. Crikey. It's Italy where we begin this week.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, Chris Smalling, London Tower, just along the Thames from the other big landmark, Ben Big. And but what a goal that was. What a goal that was at San Siro on Saturday as Inter hosted Roma, coached, although he was serving a touchline ban by former Inter hero Jose Mourinho, and Inter once again taking the lead and then losing a match. First of all, cracking stuff from Roma, from Smalling and Dybala, James.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, they went behind. It was quite an interesting setup from Roma in that game because Jose Mourinho, you say he was coaching. I mean, he was on the coach serving that touchline ban, watching the game unfold on a big screen that some Roma electricians had basically set up for him. But he left Tammy on the bench. He played without a striker. So it was Zaniolo, Dybala and Lorenzo Pellegrini. And what they did was make the middle of the pitch really congested. And it was hard for Inter to play through. And to be honest, it was a lovely team goal from Inter that moved that Roma defensive setup around. Federico Di Marco picking up where he left off on the international break. He played very well for Italy. But then Roma showed great resilience to get back into the game. You know, Spinazzola, who I don't think has been the same player since his Achilles rupture at the Euros. He's still kind of just coming back into form. I think it's been difficult for him that Zalewski, one of the young players from Roma's academy, was a revelation last season. But he puts the ball in for Dybala. Dybala loves playing against Inter, loves playing against the teams that spurned him. So we already saw him set up the equaliser against Juventus in Turin. And we saw him score this wonderful volley where he doesn't really hit it cleanly, but it hits it with such power past Samir Handanovic.
Well, Handanovic should save that every single day, though. Come on.
Which Handanovic? The good one or the one that Inter have got today?
Well, the one that they have today can't save it. But, I mean, come on. I know it's a good move and it's a nice volley, but he should save that. It should not go in.
Yeah. I agree, Jules. You know, we could say the same about Rui Patricio as well. I mean, it was a bad night for goalkeeping at San Siro. But Dybala gets them level, and then Roma's superpower under Mourinho, because Mourinho just signs really tall players who are about 6'8". Doesn't matter if they're Nemanja Matic and they haven't played for 2 years, he still wants them in his team. And one of the reasons for that is because Roma, from set pieces, they've got one of the best crosses of the ball in Pellegrini, and they've got all these giants in the box, and one of whom is Chris Smalling. And Smalling has scored some big goals this season, but even if you overlook the goals he scored from set pieces, and the one he scored on Saturday was to win the game. Roma hadn't won at San Siro in 5 years against Inter. His defending has been very good as well, really since he came back into the side this time last year, and helped stabilise Roma, helped Mourinho settle on a system that he's never really played before, which is a back three. And that kind of solidity, that ability that Roma have to basically say, you know what, we're not ashamed to defend in our own penalty area and go on the counter-attack with Tammy, with Dybala, with Zaniolo. Because we've got Smalling and players like that, and they can help us see out wins. And, you know, I wrote a piece on The Athletic on Monday basically saying, you know, Smalling, it's kind of strange. He just isn't at all in the conversation with England. And I know he's 32. I was watching Monday Night Football on Sky last night, and they put kind of all the players that are available to Southgate on it. And Smalling, again, didn't figure in it. And there was maybe 12 centre-backs there. So, you know, on the basis of, you know, the last 11 months, you know, I think Smalling should be talked about more. I'm not saying he should start for England, but he should at least be talked about when it's like, what defenders do England have? Because he's done very well. So, yeah, I mean, he was a man of the match, I think, for the third time in 8 Roma games. And, you know, Jose was celebrating afterwards because a very big win for him against his former side. Inter destroyed Roma last year. They loved playing against them, beat them 3-0. I think they were 3-0 up at halftime at the Olympico. So to do this to them was satisfying, and it kind of showed that they're making progress, Roma.
Absolutely. They're 1 point behind Lazio and Milan in the hunt for a top four place. Inter, meanwhile, slipping to 9th, fully 8 points off the lead. A pressure building on their manager, Simone Inzaghi. Today's Gazzetta describing this evening's game, Tuesday night's game against Barcelona, as a now or never occasion. Ooh, what kind of prospects do they have against the Catalan giants?
Not great, I don't think, because, you know, I mean, Inter, this generation of Inter players have played Barcelona in the Champions League group stages before under Conte. They played very well at the Camp Nou. Lautaro gave them the lead very early, and then they couldn't maintain the intensity that they played at for an hour, and Barcelona came back into the game and won the game. And then when Barcelona came to San Siro, they played a B team, essentially. Ansu Fati scored when Ansu Fati wasn't really a known quantity to anybody. And I worry about Inter at the moment because I think it feels like something is broken. And you can see it in the body language of the players. You know, they've been really kind of irritable all season. Yeah, they throw their hands up in the air. They're complaining, not just at the referee, but with each other. Jules has mentioned Handanovic's form. You know, I think that's another reason why Onana will start against his former club, Barcelona. De Vrij has been dropped. Brozovic is injured. Lukaku hasn't played since August. But they didn't have Lukaku last year, and they played really good football last year. They won two trophies, they improved in the Champions League, and they took the title race down to the final day. And it just feels like the chemistry that this team had has gone. And I think, you know, one of the reasons for that is, you know, the club is still in financial difficulty. At the beginning of every transfer window, the players pick up Gazzetta dello Sport like you do, James. They read that they're leaving or they're being sold. And I think that ebbs away at the sense of belonging that the players have, their ability to identify with Inter. They're all wondering how long they're going to be there. And I think it does have a cumulative effect. It's not the single reason for why Inter are flopping at the moment. I think there are some shortcomings to Inzaghi. But likewise, I think were they to change the manager and bring somebody else in, I'm not sure this form that we're seeing from Inter would improve or it would change.
That's their worst start in Serie A for 11 years, back in the immediate kind of post-Mourinho period. Their opponents Tuesday night, Barcelona, by contrast or in contrast, are unbeaten in 7 games in the league and have just gone top in Spain with a 1-0 win over Mallorca.
Yes, and they are La Liga leaders for the first time in 2.5 years, which is quite incredible, because from 2009 until 2020, I think Barcelona was topping the table of La Liga for the 64% of the game days, basically. And since then, since 2020, Barcelona hasn't been leader of La Liga again, basically since Quique Setién was the manager. But, you know, they beat Mallorca, true. The game wasn't bright. Barcelona had many problems to stop Kang In-Lee, a player who is very good between the lines. But Barcelona has a couple of certainties that Inter Milan doesn't, actually, because Jens was referencing the goalkeeper. Barcelona's goalkeeper, Marc-André Ter Stegen, is rediscovering his best form. In fact, one of the saves he did to Jaume Acosta inside the 6-yard box was phenomenal, because not only he saved the ball with no time to see it, but he also blocked it. And that is reminiscent of the best Ter Stegen. And then up front, Robert Lewandowski. Really, his landing in Spanish football has been sensational. He's not only scoring goals, he has scored, by the way, the 50% of Barcelona goals this season, but also he has become a leader automatically. I don't know if he speaks the language very well. I don't know if he has had the time to, you know, settle in Barcelona completely, but he seems to be happy. On Sunday, he was cycling around in Barcelona. He is a leader and a moral reference for the players, and he's playing very well. He's scoring the goals. Barcelona has more certainties right now than Inter, but I think that this game is crucial for Barcelona. It's probably the most crucial game that Barcelona has played in the last year, because this summer they activated many levers. They sell a lot of heritage from the club, and all this was towards a target to make sure that they progress far in the Champions League. Well, the draw wasn't friendly for Inter and Barcelona, because they are playing with Bayern. Then Barcelona has been very unlucky in the international break. And this international break, I think that can take a part in some teams' future, because there are important games coming up, all of them very congested in October and November. And Barcelona has lost Araujo, Koundé, Bellerín, three players who play in the same flank of the defense ahead of the game against Inter. So probably they will have to field Sergi Roberto, Piqué, Eric García and Jordi Alba, something like that. Four players, by the way, who come from the academy. And this is not the best defense that Barcelona can field. So they've been a little bit unlucky with the injuries. Also, Memphis has been injured in the international break, but this is not a massive drama because they've got strikers. But in defense, Barcelona has been debilitated in the international break. And I think that Inter could capitalize there.
Okay, well, as you say, with Bayern in the group running away with things already on 6 points, and with Victoria Pilsen at the Allianz Arena Tuesday night, it does look like one of Barca and Inter are going to miss out. So these next two games, home and away for Inter against Barcelona, absolutely crucial. Meanwhile, Napoli and Milan both winning 3-1 at the weekend. Napoli at home to Torino, Milan in quite dramatic late circumstances at Empoli. They both have huge matches as well in that Champions League. Milan at Chelsea, Napoli at Ajax. Ooh, which are you more excited about?
Napoli are playing some of the best football in Europe at the moment. Yeah, they've not just got one of the most exciting front lines. And, you know, I mean, that's irrespective whether Osimhen plays or not. Osimhen won't be available in Amsterdam tonight. But with Simeone, with Raspadori played really well in the international break, scored in both games against England and against Hungary as Italy won their group in the Nations League, which is more important than the World Cup, as we keep reaffirming. But I think their midfield is as good as any in Europe at the moment. And, you know, look, Ajax have been knocked a little bit by that defeat to Liverpool. Yeah, they lost to AZ in the league after that. So they're second behind AZ, who are the revelation in the Eredivisie at the moment. They drew with Go Ahead Eagles at the weekend because they decided to rotate their team before the Napoli game, and that just didn't pay off. But yeah, I mean, in terms of aesthetics, this should be a very exciting game. For Milan, at Stamford Bridge, you know, we've got a piece coming out on Wednesday about, you know, Chelsea's pursuit of Rafael Leao in the summer, whether he's still of interest to them, given that they're signing Christopher Nkunku, which, you know, Rafa has been reporting on. Yeah, Tomori, Giroud going back to the Bridge. But it's just a shame, I suppose, that it won't be a full-strength Milan, because just as Barcelona have got injuries at San Siro, Chelsea will be facing a Milan side that doesn't have its best goalkeeper, Mike Maignan, who is injured with France. Teo will probably face a late fitness test, might not make it. And they lost three players to injury against Empoli as well. So as much as it was a win that showed the spirit in this Milan side, and they'll need to draw on that against Chelsea, it is a Milan side that is debilitated, to use Alvaro's word.
Indeed. Milan, who were 1-0 up away to Empoli in the 91st minute, then saw Empoli snatch a late equaliser and celebrate getting a point, only to then see Milan from kickoff score again and then again to make it 3-1 in the 96th minute. Remarkable. Both Napoli and Milan are currently atop their group. Chelsea, a huge game this for them, because they are currently bottom of Group E. But there's only 3 points between Milan on top and Chelsea, so things could change very rapidly. Quick shout to Monza, who got their second straight win. Berlusconi's team, they beat Sampdoria 3-0. Sampdoria promptly fired their manager. They're bottom of the table. You fear for Samp. You do. Next up, Bundesliga.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a handbreak off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone, host of Handbreak Off, the twice-weekly Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Each week, I'm joined by two of Amy Lawrence, Adrian Clark, Art de Roche and James McNicholas. What a lineup that is, to talk about the best club in the Premier League. This week, join us to bask in the North London Derby glory. And let me tell you, do we bask? Yes, we do. Come back later in the week on Friday as we look ahead to another massive tussle with Liverpool and look to keep the number one firmly by our name. Search for Handbrake Off now, available wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, if you could hit follow to make sure you keep up with the best team, that's us, covering the best team. That is Handbrake Off. So good, we made it twice.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Rafi, FC Bayern won. You've told us about all this. They beat by Leverkusen 4-0. They're now 2 points behind Union and Freiburg. Union got beaten by Eintracht Frankfurt, who are going to be facing Spurs, of course. Bayern, meanwhile, a level with Borussia Dortmund, who themselves were beaten 3-2 at Köln. And this is very exciting because Dortmund are facing Bayern next weekend. Yikes.
Yeah, it wasn't the ideal preparation. I mean, losing to Köln is bad enough, but the way they did it, having taken a lead and then kind of falling apart in the second half, was reminiscent of so many Dortmund collapses that Terzic, the coach, came out and said, well, we've seen it for years. We see what's missing, but we don't seem to be able to change it. He seemed very, very frustrated. I don't know if you can get that mentality out of the team without making big changes, but the problem that Dortmund have is they seem to have this structure where they have these kids who more often than not are amazing. And I'm thinking of, you know, Jude Bellingham at the moment and Gio Reyna. But by nature, they lack experience and lack a little bit of sometimes solidity and consistency. But the players around them, sort of the mid-20-year-old guys or even older players, it's they who always seem to find a way to kind of switch off in games. And that is hugely problematic. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, nothing's happened yet. They're only 2 points off the top. They're in a decent position in the Champions League, especially if they get a good result against Sevilla, which is going to be, I think, possible this week. But then Bayern loom very large. And if you ask me what the result would be if they play each other tomorrow, I would go for a heavy Bayern win simply because Dortmund have so many flaws yet once again. So that's very, very disappointing, I think, for them and for the rest of the league, because you want your second best team to play like the second best team, and right now they don't.
All right. Who is the second best team then for you, Raf, this season?
At the moment, Bayern. No, I'm joking. I think Union Berlin.
Really?
Play like the second best team at the moment. I mean, they of course don't have the players, they don't have the fluidity, the creativity that some of the bigger sides have, but they're really solid. And yes, they lost against Frankfurt, which was a disappointment, but we've seen them just show up and be very courageous, take the game to Bayern when they were playing at home not long ago. And they're just the real deal right now. I mean, Freiburg I'm slightly less convinced by, even though they're second at the moment and they're also going really strong. But Union, I think, is the side that's been most impressive this season.
Rafi, a lot of goals in the Bundesliga this weekend. I mean, there's a 5-1 from Werder Bremen against Gladbach, a couple of 4-0s, Bayern against Leverkusen, Leipzig against Bochum, and then like 3-2s. I mean, is anybody coach defending in the Bundesliga? What's going on?
I think apart from one year, I think I'm right in saying the Bundesliga has been the highest scoring league in the top five for 30 years in a row. Statisticians, please phone in if I'm wrong.
No, that's why people talk about the Bundesliga tax, no? For transfers out of...
Why? There's so many goals that you need to...
No, just that, you know, it's a little bit like goals in the Eredivisie. When you're signing a striker, I don't need to name names, but yeah. Exciting
Haaland,
league,
for example.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen big Bundesliga strikers really struggle after moving to different leagues this season. So maybe there's something in it. But I don't know, James. I think we don't have any defensive teams, with the possible exception of Union, who would probably find that characterization unfair, but they're perhaps the one side who are a little bit more old school and pragmatic in their approach. Everyone else kind of wants to play, wants to press high. And if you don't do it well, that leaves huge gaps and becomes very open. But I think it's kind of what people want. Of course, you know, maybe perhaps could increase your chances by having a more pragmatic approach. But coaches, we don't really have coaches like that in the Bundesliga. We don't really have clubs who say to their coaches and their players, you know, what we want is to be really solid and win every game 1-0. So it's kind of the nature of where the league is at the moment. And I think, you know, we have an obvious problem with competitiveness when it comes to the title race, but the fact that not the league, but also the games themselves are very open is something that is actually, you know, hugely attractive. I mean, you go to Werder Bremen, Gladbach, and Bremen are newly promoted side. Gladbach have been pretty decent under Farke, and they just, within 30 minutes, score 3 goals and totally blast them out of the water. And people are celebrating as if they're back in the 1980s under Otto Rehhagel. So, you know, you get these big moments. Next week, it could be the other way around again. But that's kind of the intrigue of the league, I think.
Very nice. Well, in the Champions League, 5 Bundesliga clubs bringing their intrigue into play across Tuesday and Wednesday by Leverkusen. As I mentioned, they're in the bottom two right now in the Bundesliga. Currently second in their Champions League group behind the surprising Bruges. They're going to be at Porto, who've lost 4 Champions League matches in a row and are bottom of that group. Bayern in the Inter and Barcelona group host Pilsen, as we mentioned. Dortmund are at Sevilla. RB Leipzig up against Celtic and Frankfurt hosting Spurs. Ooh, what do you see happening in that one, Raf?
Yeah, Frankfurt-Spurs is an interesting one. I mean, at home, Frankfurt tend to look very strong, especially on those big European nights, although they started badly against Sporting. But yeah, going into that game on the back of that win against Union, I think they will be fairly confident. They can beat even a more defensive side than Union in Spurs under Conte. I think Frankfurt have a decent chance. Spurs don't look that impressive at the moment, and Frankfurt are, you know, within their own means, they're a decent side. So yeah, I'd give them a good chance to actually win that game.
All right, Europa League champions, of course, currently level with Spurs on 3 points behind Sporting in that group. Antonio Conte, whose side are coming off a 2-0 defeat at Sporting, and whose win rate in the Champions League has now plummeted to 34% with that defeat. And Leipzig against Celtic, Rafa?
Yeah, Leipzig have found a bit of form. I mean, Bochum are the worst side in the division, and they just changed managers and clearly weren't quite up to it. But there are signs that Werner and Nkunku are striking up a good relationship again. Werner has looked a little bit lost since coming back, but he scored 2 goals and Nkunku scored 2 goals. Marco Rosa has momentum going into the game. They will feel that Celtic is a sort of opponent that they should beat. So there will be pressure on Marco Rosa, I think, to continue with this upward trend, which has been still a little bit unstable. But yeah, this is a Leipzig side that if they start playing and they take the lead, then they should have too much for Celtic. But we've seen what Rangers did to them. We've seen how poor they were against Shakhtar not long ago. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Celtic get a draw. But Leipzig should really do it.
Celtic, who pipped Leipzig to second spot in qualification in their Europa League group when they were drawn together 4 years ago in that competition. You mentioned the growing relationship between Timo Werner and Christopher Nkunku. Is that set to be shattered by the latter's transfer to Chelsea, Rafa?
It certainly looks that way, James. Unless Timo Werner comes back to Chelsea and then they can play again with each other, but I think that is unlikely. Yeah, we've seen reports, and David Ornstein had a story out in his column saying that it's basically done between the player and Chelsea. The way things work is there is a kind of a release clause. It's not as clearly defined as other release clauses because it's dependent on certain performances, etc. But Chelsea, certainly from all of what we've heard, feel that they've got a very, very strong chance of making this happen. And the denials haven't really convinced me, I must say. So I think it might not be 100% done because it never is until contracts are signed, but Chelsea are in a great position to make it happen. And I think it would be a real coup. I don't think you can downplay just how good this guy is and will be. Really outstanding player, probably the best player, not named Lewandowski in Haaland for the last 2-3 years in the Bundesliga. And yeah, a super talent. My only fear or concern would be that I don't think he's a number nine. I think he's best playing either in a two or in a three with someone next to him who's slightly more physical and slightly more orthodox. I wouldn't put him as a number nine, just the way that also Kai Havertz and Timo Werner don't really want to be, I think, that number nine, in certainly not in the Premier League. So I think they need to find a way of giving him support. But in terms of his individual potential, he's absolutely superb.
Right. And would that move be for January or the end of the season?
No, it will be for the end of the season. I can't foresee a scenario whereby Leipzig would let him go before that.
All right. Excellent. Next up, quick mention of the Nations League because it's so important, and Liga.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow.
it's your perfect teammate. The Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Carvajal, como me gusta. Remata Nico. Gol, gol, gol.
Ahí estamos. Ahí estamos. Ahí estamos.
Gol, Morata.
The Nations League Final Four, Netherlands, Croatia, Spain, and Italy. Italy, who sealed their place winning in Hungary. Quite the turnaround for the Azzurri after the way their year started. Spain, meanwhile, grabbing the last spot with a victory in the Iberian Derby against Portugal. How about that, Alvaro?
Well, it was apotheosic because Spain had been so poor for the first, let's say, 70 minutes and the previous game against Switzerland that it wasn't expected. But Álvaro Morata scored the winner. I have to say that Luis Enrique gave a chance to a few players in midfield who didn't work at all together. Koke and Carlos Soler playing with Rodri, they just didn't work. And then in the second half, he brought in Pedri, Gavi, Busquets. Rodri went down to the centre back position and he did very well over there. And Nico Williams, the Athletic Club, Club Bilbao winger, came in and he set up the goal for Álvaro Morata. He was busy in the game. Sparkling, I would say. And yeah, Spain got the win, and then Luis Enrique vindicated himself in a very funny way on Twitter. He just uploaded on his Twitter account. He doesn't tweet a lot, by the way, but this time he uploaded an Excel with the achievements of Spain in the last 3-4 years. And he was basically like showing off a little bit that Spain has been at least there with him because they reached the Nations League final a year ago, the Euro semifinals, and then this Nations League Final Four as well. So it was a little bit weird by Luis Enrique, but given the amount of negative opinions that he has been receiving by some very influential journalists in the Real Madrid sphere, I think that it's understandable what Luis Enrique did. All that said, you ask me, will Spain win the Nations League? And I'm telling you, maybe or maybe not, maybe. Because I don't know what to think about the Spanish national side.
All right, what about the World Cup?
The World Cup, again, the same thing. I think that we're going to give a torrid time to Germany and then we are going to struggle to beat Costa Rica or Japan because this is Spain right now. They cannot win the winnable games. And then when they play against good opposition, you realize, oh yeah, they are as good as them. But, you know, we are missing so many individual talent as well. And Gerard Moreno, for example, on Monday, it was announced that he's going to miss the next 4 or 5 weeks. So he's one of the good scorers of Spain. He will probably not make it to the World Cup. And Ansu Fati is not making it to the squad. Difficult to predict. I mean, you look at France, even if they have a bad day, you've got Mbappé, Benzema, they beat you 2-0 easily on a bad day. Spain needs to have a good day to win games. That's the thing. It's very difficult like that.
Mm. Hey, let's look at France, Jules. Let's look at Ligue 1, where just 4 points separate the top four, three of whom are unbeaten after 9 matches, PSG, Marseille and Lens. And the other team in there are Lorient, who you told us about earlier on. What a remarkable start they've been having, because they were kind of marked out for relegation, no, rather than potentially Champions League qualification.
Yeah, you're right, completely. They struggled last season to stay up, even. They got rid of their manager in the summer and they promoted within because Régis Le Bris, the new manager, was the head of the academy. He's like a super intellectual, which is really rare in football, but he had a decent career as a player.
Like James.
Like James, very much. Yeah. And I think was always very interested in other things than football, you know, went back to university, all that kind of stuff. and always had really, really good ideas. I just think he was waiting for the right time to, you know, to get that kind of promotion. And now that he got it, he's working really wonders with a team that is playing great football to start with, which I think is very important. And developing players, improving players. We talked about his nephew, but he's still a young kid. He needs more time. But someone like Enzo Lefebvre, for example, who is for me, the most outstanding player in this team, who plays as a number 10 or number 8, who is the player in the whole Big Five leagues who has the most press this season so far, pressures on the opposition. And he's someone who has an incredible story, really. His dad was a gangster, spent a lot of his time in prison until he committed suicide in prison. And I think Enzo Lefebvre had to live with it when he was a young kid, very promising, going through the academy ranks, and having this burden on his shoulder that his dad was never there to watch him play, unlike other kids who had their whole family and he had to provide for his mum. And I think becoming a football player, as much as he loved football and was clearly very good at it, but was also very much like the only way for the whole Lefebvre family to have a decent life, considering that the dad was in jail for so long. So incredible story, and to see him now playing so well, because he had always so much talent, but he's still very young. There was always something missing, and it seems that this season so far, he's been really, really impressive. So well done to Le Bris for also getting the best out of all those players that he has. We could name, you know, Ouattara, we could name Mofi, and plenty more, because they're really the sensation of the season so far.
Jules, does Le Bris have a nickname like Pep Genesio? And does Le Bris mean anything? Is it Regis the
cheeses?
It doesn't. It could be the cheese, but there's an S. The cheese is like IE at the end. This means IS.
What?
Obviously, in French Brittany, you've got a lot of le something, you know, in two words.
Yes.
And he's very, very much Breton in every sense of the word. So, but no, not yet. He's new. Give us a bit of a time before we find a nickname for him.
Very good. All right. Well, there they are. Third in Ligue 1 behind PSG and Olympique Marseille, who beat Angers 3-0. PSG, meanwhile, were victorious against Nice, who are having one or two problems. 2-1 the scoreline there. Both these two are facing Portuguese opposition in the Champions League, Jules. OM up against Sporting, a game they'll lose, I'm confident in saying.
That's what they
because
do.
Because that's what they do. While PSG travelled to Benfica, who haven't kept that incredible winning streak going because they only drew this weekend, but are still looking like really, really tough opposition. Those two teams level on 6 points at the top of that group. Juve and Maccabi Haifa, the other two teams in that quartet. How worried are you for PSG at Benfica?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good game. If PSG starts and play in the first half like they did at Maccabi Haifa, for example, in match day two, then they could get destroyed by what is a very good team. We've said it on the Gold Show many times. We saw it against Juventus. We saw it, obviously, we see in the league, even if you're right, the 0-0 draw the weekend was a bit disappointing, but I think they probably had their mind already on this PSG clash, especially at home at the La Luz Stadium. So it was going to be pretty good to see if PSG can raise the level up a bit more, and certainly for a longer period of time than what we've seen so far, where they've been really good at times, but just in control very much. I think this game, they will have to be much better than any game that they've played so far this season, including the Juventus one. And for Benfica, if they can also respond to an opposition like PSG, if Enzo Fernandez can still be very influential, you know, against a team like PSG, what will Messi do? He was on top form against Nice, got a lovely free kick that you saw the photo or the video where Goat, the fashion brand, being now one of the PSG sponsors, yes, on the advertising board, it happened that after, just while the free kick is scored, the goat appears on the advert.
It's a sign.
Yes, a sign.
I mean, it literally is a sign, but
it did happen before. Yeah. To be fair, it's not the first time that this. But he's on great form. One of close to being the best Messi, or very good Messi, certainly. And Mbappé was even rested for an hour against Nice.
Yeah.
So it's going to be great. I think one of the games of this midweek in the Champions League.
James was off in France last week, and he came back raving about a player called, is it Neymar, James, who you got really excited by?
I think he might be the revelation of this World Cup. Don't know who he plays for, but someone's got a player on their hands, a real player on their hands there. So
I'm glad you went to Paris to tell us that. This was really worth it. That and obviously the great food that you had, because I got plenty of messages. Oh, mon frère, the food is the best in Paris. Oh, where it looked like James Horncastle spent basically his 2 days in restaurants. I mean, I'm sure he went to the Parc des Princes at some point. But apart from that, it looked like he spent a lot of time in Paris restaurant, which
it'd
is very
rude
good.
Not to. Be rude not to.
Right,
James, France or Italy? France or Italy?
France wins with bread, I would say.
Really?
France easily wins the bread contest.
Yeah, but, I agree with that.
But focaccia?
I like focaccia, but range of bread. Think of everything that the French do with bread, James. Pain au chocolat, croissant, baguette.
No, without doubt, the one black hole in the Italian diet is breakfast. I mean, the cornetto, as they call it, their kind of vaguely sugared croissant. It's a real letdown. And France absolutely rocks. But, I mean, pizza and pasta, here they come. Anyway, I'm a bit surprised. But I hear what you're saying about the bread. Excellent.
The place where James went on, what was it, the Tuesday lunch?
Tuesday.
When you went to Table.
Yeah. The Table.
Yeah, in the 12th arrondissement, just literally where I was born, in the hospital there. It's very nice.
So. How many years ago, Jules?
42 years ago today.
Wow. Yeah,
in that 12th arrondissement.
All right. Well, next up, we'll be talking about a table of another kind. Barcelona on top of La Liga. What's going on with Real and what's going to happen to those sides and more in the Champions League next.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Let's talk about La Liga, where, as Alvaro was mentioning, Barcelona are on our top on goal difference. After Real Madrid had their kind of habitual draw with Osasuna, the three of their last five meetings that they've only taken a point from. Not sure what the story is there. Karim Benzema, meanwhile, returning from injury and missing a penalty in this game. And again, habitually, he does that. Third penalties missed against Osasuna this calendar year.
Yeah, against this goalkeeper. So, you know, there is some fallible element of Benzema as well, especially after his injury. But I think that we shouldn't underestimate Osasuna at all, because they are one of the good sides of La Liga in terms of intensity bar creativity. They are one of the good sides of the top half of the table. And even they brought from the bench Aymar Orov, one of the gems of their academy in the second half. That tells you that they've got some depth as well. Then up front, Quique García scored a very nice goal against Real Madrid. He's a journeyman. He played in England, I think, like a long time ago. And now, after playing for Eibar, he's scoring goals for Osasuna because he knows the job. But yeah, I think that Osasuna had a very good display at Santiago Bernabeu. And I saw that Real Madrid, sometimes they've got a tendency to give the ball to Vinicius when they don't know what to do with it. Especially when Luka Modric is not on the pitch and, you know, the creative sources of the team are not that many, they pass the ball to Vinicius for him to do something. And I think that this is not sustainable in the long term, because the teams are starting to do a 2-on-1 with Vinicius or a 3-on-1, like some basketball type defense. And this is working. I mean, Vinicius scored the goal the other day, yes. But on the other hand, he scored the goal because he crossed the ball and no one went for the header. Rudiger tried, and the ball just hit the net. But Vinicius didn't have the best of the games. And Real Madrid in general, I think they look a little bit flat this time. They were playing with one more man since the midway through the second half, and still they didn't create that many chances. So I think that, yes, it's not concerning for Real Madrid. They haven't lost a single game this season, which is very good. And now they are playing Shakhtar Donetsk, and they have played against them so many times in the Champions League that it's difficult to say something new. But one of the setbacks for Real Madrid is that Thibaut Courtois is not going to be available for the game. He will be in the sidelines with a back issue. I think that the story of the game is in Shakhtar's manager, Jovicevic, because he was a former Castilla player, de ese continuo Real Madrid. He lived in Marbella, he had businesses with some very well established people in Spain, like Sergio Scariolo, the Spanish national coach in basketball. And this is a very special game for him, for Jovicevic. He played for Real Madrid. He couldn't make it because he had terrible injuries, but you know, he decided to take Shakhtar, and he's doing a very good job. Shakhtar in the Champions League have scored many goals, and they are in a good position right now.
Yep, Shakhtar, who had a mighty 4-1 win in the opening round of Champions League group stage matches this year, away at Leipzig, but only drew in Warsaw against Celtic. They're on 4 points. Real Madrid top of that group. Just returning to La Liga, Alvaro. So Osasuna, pride of Pamplona, doing well. But how about the other big Basque side, Athletic Club de Bilbao? Third place.
I've got something to brag about here. I mean, they're astonishing this season, really. They beat Almeria 4-0, and I knew that this was going to happen because there is a feeling in Bilbao that this can be a very good season, one of these seasons in which the team qualifies for Europe. It's not only about the Williams brothers, both scored, by the way, against Almeria. It's also about the quality in midfield. For the last 4 or 5 years, with the exception of Muniain, no one was very creative in midfield. But now we have this guy, Ollán Sanzet. This is his fourth season in La Liga, but he's still very young. He plays for the Spanish under 21, and he's a great player between the lines as well, and he adds this quality to the team that shouldn't go unnoticed. And then the defense is working very well. Dani García is no longer the holding midfielder. We have another holding midfielder like Vesga, who is good on the ball. Dani García wasn't so good on the ball. And the team is oozing with confidence, and they go to the game thinking that they can win it and thinking that they can score many. Because with Marcelino, we were fantastic defensively, but with Valverde, we attack much more. And we have scored 4 goals this season in 2 or 3 games already, which is quite something, actually, because we don't have like a proper number 9 like Aduriz, who was scoring 20 goals per season. Not anymore. This is a collective effort, but all the strikers are up to the challenge. And La Liga table looks very nice right now. And it looks very logical to me, because the best 3 sides in Spanish football, in terms of silverware, domestic silverware, are Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Athletic Club Bilbao. And the 3 of them are topping the table.
Very nice. It's Betis who are in 4th place. They've got Roma in the Europa League on Thursday. And then Atletico Madrid, just outside the Champions League spots, but victorious this weekend. They had a 2-0 win at Sevilla. It's Sevilla where Athletic Club de Bilbao will be heading next weekend. Will Julen Lopetegui still be there to welcome them?
That's a good question. I think that the reason why Lopetegui wasn't sacked and hasn't been sacked yet is because Sevilla hasn't found a replacement, even though there are talks that Sampaoli could return. Sevilla under Sampaoli did very well, very well, until he left to coach Argentina. But I think that Lopetegui is having basically extra lives every week. I mean, the display, the performance against Atletico in Madrid was very poor. Atletico could have scored many more, and it would have been very ugly to see for Sevilla fans. And the truth is that Sevilla at home, they've been abysmal. I mean, Manchester City beat them heavily. Barcelona beat them easily. And Atletico de Madrid beat them even more easily. I mean, high-profile games. Is Sevilla competing in them? The answer is no. But in the low-profile games, are Sevilla competing in them? The answer is no, too, because they couldn't beat Copenhagen, with all the respect to the Danish side. And then in La Liga, they have dropped so many points, so many points. They are closer to relegation than to Europe. I mean, the situation is very difficult to reverse. And on top of that, I think that we can point at Lopetegui, because the team is lacking a lot of spirit. He himself is lacking a lot of spirit. But what about Monchi and the craft of this squad? I mean, modern football is going in some direction, and it's like, it looks like fresh legs, speed, intensity is the key of many teams. Well, Sevilla's squad physiognomy is nowhere near there, with players like Isco or Papu right now, or many more who are not very mobile, like Delaney, for example. So, you know, I think that many people over there got it wrong.
Sevilla currently bottom of their group in the Champions League, facing Borussia Dortmund on Wednesday. Dortmund in 2nd spot behind Man City. Sevilla, meanwhile, also 1 place and I think 1 point off relegation in La Liga. Crikey. Elsewhere in the Champions League for the Spanish sides, well, Atletico Madrid, who got that victory at the Sanchez Pizjuan at the weekend, face a pretty big game themselves. They are going to be at Bruges. Big Belgian surprises, Bruges. They're currently on 3 points like Leverkusen, so big game that for Simeone.
This is very interesting. Bruce scored 4 goals against Porto, and it's not easy to win at Dragao. Porto hasn't lost a game domestically in the league for almost 2 years now. And Bruce went there, did it. They got a player, former Barcelona, Ferran Jutglà, who is scoring many goals for them. And Atletico, I think that they should be able to compete very well this time because Jimenez and Savic are back, meaning that the best possible defenders are going to play. And this has repercussions in some other areas of the pitch because then Marcos Llorente can play as a right midfielder, his favorite position, and because Axel Witsel can play in his preferred position, which is midfield. So, of course, getting players back is very important for Atletico de Madrid. One player that is in the list that I didn't think that he was going to be is Rodrigo de Paul, because as you may know, he asked for some days off to stay with his father because he's sick in Argentina, and then he was spotted in Miami in some music awards. He came back to Madrid and he's in the squad. I thought that he was not going to be, but anyway, Simeone has been a little bit nice with him. Fine. Good. No journalist ahead of the game against Bruce asking about Rodrigo de Paul, which tells you as well how sometimes good with Simeone and with Atletico the Atletico reporters can be. No questions about Rodrigo de Paul is a bit weird for me, to be honest with you. I think that was the key question that had to be asked to Simeone yesterday. But anyway, one thing about Atletico before I finish with it. Atletico hasn't won 2 games in a row in the Champions League group stage for 3 years now. This tells you that they are suffering a lot to get the points in the Champions League as of late. They have to do it. They have to do it because otherwise they will have to fight to qualify with Porto, and that is going to be pretty difficult. And Leverkusen are looking sharp as well, at least in the Champions League.
Atletico, who beat them last time out on match day 2. 2-0, crikey. All right. We can't leave you today without a salute to a very special player who's lit up so many of these leagues. Born in Brest. Jules, French-born and bred.
That's right. He should have played for France, really. He would have won the World Cup instead of messing it up.
Trezeguet did that.
Trezeguet did the opposite thing, yeah?
That's true. Gonzalo Gerardo Higuain. So, time for a few words. What's he meant to you, Rafa?
Well,
World Cup final.
Really a lot.
All right. He was a star for Napoli. Also for Juve, maybe a bit less for Milan.
Ah, but Real Madrid, I mean, at Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
Yeah,
107
really
goals in 190 games. Benzema couldn't get in the team because of Higuain.
Yeah.
Germany got very, very lucky that on that night, he just wasn't on it.
Rodrigo Palacio as well missed one with Neuer, I remember. Yeah, Messi basically is one shot of Higuain away from being World Cup champion.
All right. Well, that's a goal that he missed, but he scored so many others. Including 5 for Chelsea. Not sure if you remember those. Loads for Real Madrid, as James was saying. Quite a few.
And he broke the single season scoring record, James, in it.
Yeah.
That one goal that he scored, you know, when he chased it and then kind of turns and do the overhead kick.
Frosinone.
And he was instrumental in a couple of Real Madrid league titles as well.
And he was doing pretty well at Inter Miami when he decided enough was enough, Jules.
Yeah, I think he's on 14 in the last 15 games or something. He's really, really good form. That's why it was a bit surprising that he, you know, didn't want to continue maybe a little bit more. Mm. I mean, he's got Phil Neville as a coach, so maybe it's not that surprising. I'm kidding. You don't have to kill me.
Well, so long, Gonzalo. And thanks for all the goals. Be interesting to see what his next move is. I know what we've got in store. That's the Goal Show Tuesday, Wednesday. So perhaps you'll join us for that. Thursday then totally returns with our podcast reaction to the midweek action. And next Tuesday, we'll get everyone back together for another Euro roundup. Perhaps you'll be joining us too. Listen, I do hope so. For now, though, it's many, many thanks to Alvaro, Rafa, James. Happy birthday, Jules.
Thank you.
A great day. And producer Charlie and you, listener. We'll catch up with you soon. Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.